Tonight's show has been brought to you by One Taste of Main Street Cake Shop. Baked from scratch, custom-made cakes and cupcakes, and you'll be hooked. Every cake is made to order with only the finest and freshest ingredients. This is no ordinary bakery. Cakes are never pre-made. Main Street Cake Shop is in demand, having provided cakes and cupcakes for numerous prestigious events, bridal fairs, and venues. Owned and operated by April Murray, she has garnered many awards for not only her exquisite cake designs, but also for their incredible taste. If you're looking for a cake for any occasion, or cupcakes in a variety of flavors, then Main Street Cake Shop is the place. Visit them on the web at mainstreetcakeshop.com.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Take Two Radio. I'm Pam, your host, and with me tonight, of course, I have my lovely co-host, Dawn. Hello, Dawn.
Hello, hello. How are you?
I'm very excited because of our guest tonight, and I know that I've been getting a lot of tweets and a lot of Facebook messages and wherever social media can get from. Everybody's excited. Tonight, we welcome the wonderful and sometimes scary Cynthia Preston. Hello, Cynthia.
Hello, ladies.
Hello.
Hello. How are you?
Oh, she doesn't sound so scary right now, does she?
No. You got to be charming before you kill people.
Yeah.
That's true. You got to kind of warm your way in, you know?
Yes, lull them into a false sense of security. Everything will be just fine.
Yeah. I happen to be looking at some videos that Enrique, one of the guys that follows me, and I follow him on Twitter, he was tweeting out with your scenes from General Hospital. Mm-hmm. And when you just said that now, it reminded me of the time that you were with Ned, and you just finished making love, and he was going to leave, and you're like, you shoot at him, and you're like, you're not going to say goodbye?
Right. Oh, you're going way back to the very, very beginning to, yeah, my first tryst on the show. Yeah. Lovely, lovely Wally.
Yeah, no, that was good. The writers were phenomenal. I mean, really, Faith was the best character. She was so well written.
Oh, my God.
A psychopath, but it was really good. Like, I loved the scene in the church where I'm crying because I've killed my grandmother.
Yeah.
They made me do it. It's your fault. If you've just given me the money, I'm crying, real tears. Like I thought that was so well written. I was very impressed.
It was. And, you know, you were so believable that when I said you were coming to the show, I said you were the baddest woman of daytime.
Aww.
With no heart. You were, you know, you just
That's
walked
so nice
around
of you.
Doing whatever you wanted to do and taking whatever you wanted to take or taking whoever you wanted to take. So,
yeah.
Oh, my gosh. It was phenomenal.
Yeah, she acted like a man, which I loved.
Yes,
I loved that about her.
Exactly
yeah.
Like a man.
Yeah.
And from what I read, I saw that your character was actually created for you by Bob Guza because you had come in a few times, I guess, for other things.
You know,
and he just
true.
Loved you so much that he decided to
tested,
write this character.
Yeah. I had tested for Summer, the hooker with the heart of gold.
Uh-huh.
That went to the lovely Brittany.
Mm-hmm.
And was very disappointed because when you test, you have signed the contract. Like, whenever they actually do a screen test, they're down to their final 3, 5, maximum, I would think, 7, because they've negotiated the contracts with the agents,
mm-hmm.
and you have to sign on the dotted line before you go in there for your final audition. So they, you know, the producers have all the power at that point. So I tested. So I knew that I was one of the finalists. I knew that it was between me and only a few other people, and
mm-hmm.
I knew how much money I would be making the next day if they picked
yeah.
me. That's when it gets crazy.
Uh-huh.
That's
right.
When you go, it's not about the money. I'm not doing this for money, but it is my livelihood. So then you go, oh, yeah, my Lord, they're going to give me that? Holy crow. So you do get a tad excited. You try to keep it out of your mind.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I was really, really disappointed. And then they called and said, we want you on the show, and we're going to create a character for you. They didn't even tell me what it was. They didn't give me any clue as to what it was. I was, like, so excited. I was like, great, that's so fabulous. Thank you so much. Like, I just felt like my life had changed, which it had. They changed
mm-hmm.
my life. So I was pretty surprised when they had me be a mob boss, a psycho killer. don't know where that came from. No, actually, I do. I think there was a moment in my test with Tony Geary where I turned on him and I felt something so strong and so vehemently. And he had been, his character had been accusing me of taking the easy way out or playing it safe. Mm-hmm. And I turned on him and I felt it very deeply. I said something like, how dare you judge me for that? If I want to play it safe, mm-hmm. it's my business. And I startled him, the look on his face. And I think it might have been the strength in my vehement retort that made them go, oh, I'm going to write something strong for this girl.
Yeah.
And we'd have to ask Bob, of course, if that was the truth. But that was the moment that I remember standing out. First of all, I'm in awe of Tony Geary, and I'm trying to just stay out of my head.
Yeah.
And stay in my heart and respond instinctively and not think, because that's mm-hmm. my training. You know, it's Meisner training. You don't get in your head. If you get in your head, throw your attention back on the other person. Don't worry about it. Just throw your attention back on the other person. And really, I'm not responsible for my performance. The other person is.
Yeah.
That's
true.
Well, when you were playing Faith, you know, and being the character that Faith was, what kind of mental preparation did you have to do, or did you do any to play that role?
You know, it's actually really interesting to me. Sorry. It's not boring to anybody else. When I first started, I was so excited. I was so euphoric. And I was thinking to myself, how am I going to, you know, stop smiling? I'm just so excited to be here. This is so much fun. And I had this scene where I had to walk down this huge staircase, and I think I come face to face with Tamara Braun, and I thought, you know, I have to get scary and menacing. And then I thought to myself, oh, no, the most important thing that I learned that I took from my acting course was not to stuff your emotions. Doesn't matter if the scene calls for you to weep. If you want to laugh, go ahead and laugh. Don't hide it. If the scene calls for you to laugh and you want to cry, go ahead and cry. Like, the pure emotion that you feel, if you let it show, will punch through that TV screen. You know, like, you have
it's
to be
better than faking it, right?
Don't fake
That's
anything.
True.
Don't hide anything. Don't stuff anything just because it's not scripted. So I'm standing mm-hmm. at the top of the stairs waiting to walk down to the esteemed Miss Braun. And I remembered this lesson. And so I went down and I played the scene smiling, thinking, okay, how do I use that for this character? This character loves to walk up and, figuratively speaking, of course, with her words, stick the knife in and watch it turn and look you right in the eye and smile and love every second of it. The flavor of Faith was born, that I just was having so much fun that Faith just relished every moment of it. And so they started writing me funnier lines because I was always smiling and enjoying myself. And so, you know, Tony Geary always had the greatest, greatest lines. He's so brilliant.
Oh, definitely.
But they were
yeah.
writing, like, he ad-libs a lot. Not that the writing's not brilliant for him too, mm-hmm. but he is just, you know, incredible. And I loved it when the soap magazines would print up, you know, the funny lines from the week, and I would get in there. I think I was, you know, behind Tony, of course, but I got in there a lot because
yeah.
I started being really funny. You know, so I got all these fabulous, you know, snarky one-liners and little zingers, and oh my gosh, it was so much fun the way they wrote for me.
I know. And you know what? I just picture in my head, anytime I think of your character, and of course, all of the different scenes go through my mind, but one of the most outstanding was at the church with the shootout and the kids being kidnapped and just seeing Jason with his guns blazing and thinking, oh, my God, is he really going to get her? And just that was such an intense scene. But at the same time, even though we love to hate your character, you know, you kind of hated to see her go.
Yeah,
and
sort of like you wanted
at the same time yelling, shooter, shooter, you know.
Yeah, yes, no, I understand. I understand. Oh, they were incredible scenes to shoot, and I loved doing the stunt work. They always had a stunt girl there for me for the, you know, really big falls mm-hmm. and getting shot and stuff like that. But I would beg them, beg them to let me do it. Because I was so proud when, you know, I got shot on the docks one time and mm-hmm. you have the discussion with the stunt coordinator as to, okay, the bullet is hitting me in the left shoulder, so the trajectory of the bullet is this, and I would go around like this. And, of course, Faith, I'm wearing all black and black stockings mm-hmm. and all of this. And I was so proud of myself after I did the shot because I had flung my body around and not put my hands out and not broken my fall. So my stockings were ripped. My knees were bleeding. And I get up after the scene, and everybody's, like, rushing to get, you know, medic. And I'm like, look, I didn't break my fall. Like, I was so proud. I was so excited. I was so scared that my knees are bleeding. Sorry, guys, about the stockings. But look, I didn't break my fall. Because I love to do it. So during that scene that you're mentioning in the church, there was a big fall. And I was like, look, let me do it. And they kept saying, no, absolutely not. You know, if you get hurt, we're in big trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I won't get hurt. Let me do the fall. Because if you let me do it, you can shoot it with the stunt girl anyway. But if mm-hmm. I do the fall and I do it well, then you can use the whole shot with my face in it. And then
exactly.
It's going to be more moving to the audience. Then
yeah.
With the stunt girl, you have to shoot from a certain angle. And you've got to make sure that you don't see her face clearly. And so I remember, you know, they said, no, I couldn't do it. And I did it anyway because it's just like, I hope they don't stop
it.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, one thing I've always been curious about is how in the world do soap opera, you know, people who, actors and actresses on soap operas, how do they cry on command? I mean, what do you have to do to prepare yourself to cry? Do you think about something really sad that's happened in your real life? Or what do you sniff onions? I mean, what happens there?
Well, first of all, I've never seen anybody cry literally on command, like, cry now, go ahead, and the tears come
mm-hmm.
up. But if you give actors who are emotional, who have free access to their emotions, if you give them a couple of minutes, I believe it is a case of concentration. There are people who can concentrate really, really strongly and sort of block out the world and go into their mind and their imagination. Now, the first thing you start with is the script, is what's going on with the character. Hopefully it's well-written enough, strong enough, that it moves you to that place. So it's really just about concentrating and blocking the rest of the world out. And then, like anything else, everything gets a bit stale. If you're shooting for a long time, if you have to cry for 9 hours for one scene, which, of course, isn't the way they work on the soap, but you will have to cry for 9 hours for nine scenes. But
mm-hmm.
in a movie, you'll have to cry for 9 hours. One of my jobs recently, I had to do exactly that. It was 9 hours to shoot one scene, and I had to be crying. So, you know, first you just start with the characters, what they're going through in the story, and then maybe sometimes you have to bring in something else from your own experience that relates to it. And then that gets a little dry, and you have to add a little something else. So you keep digging and digging and digging and mining your personal experiences to add to what the character's going through. I think it's really, really lame, and it's only me, and it's probably bad of me to say this, but it's really lame to go right outside the character, like if you have to cry and you just think about, you know, your dog being sick, and it's so separated. I wonder if that doesn't separate it for the audience, invested in what's going on with your character, but that's just a guess. Because I've seen people cry on screen and looked at it and gone, why are they not moving me? You know, I'm
yeah.
in a movie theater. I can see that they're really crying. I don't think they just blew menthol in their eyes because their eyes aren't really red. I think that person's really crying. Why is it not moving me? And I wonder if it's because they're going too far from the story to find
That's
the tear.
True. That's
As
true.
Just a guess. I don't know. I don't
and,
know.
And
but,
some people mm-hmm. fake cry and it can be believable, you know, where there's no tears, but some of them, it's just too cheesy, and you even wonder why they even bothered to do that.
Yeah, it's, you know, I think they feel the pressure of it scripted to do it, or maybe they have directors and producers standing there going, if you can't make it happen for real, you just fake it. But that's really, again, just my opinion, really bad acting. It goes back to not stuffing your feelings, like go with what's really going on. Because
mm-hmm.
if you're having incredible anxiety over not being able to produce tears, there is a lot going on inside the actor at that moment. Like
right.
that could feed the story even better than, you know, water rolling down somebody's face. You
right.
know, it's like what
mm-hmm.
is truthful is moving, and it really transcends the screen and gets through the audience, and people are touched. So, you
mm-hmm.
know, hopefully you have a director who is open to working with you and seeing what's really going on. And if they really want the tears, and I've had this happen so many times that, okay, I'm not quite going down the same road as the director wants me to, one director, Mario, as a party that I worked with so many times, one of my favorites, he had the gift. He would walk up to me and say four words in my ear, and my emotional state would be transformed.
Oh, wow.
He was so good. I mean, I think that's the gift of a director, to change, to mold, to, you know, work their actors like clay. And if they're going to manipulate them, don't let them know they're being manipulated. You know, if you're having this communication where you feel like you have the partnership and a teamwork, often they have to manipulate you anyway. But I had one director once who was very manipulative and not very good at it, and it just made me mad, which got in the way.
Exactly, mm-hmm. exactly. Especially
so then I had to really
to
calm down.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I had to cry, but I'd been crying all day for everybody else's coverage. It was my very first job called Miles to Go, and I'd never acted before. And I had modeled, and the talent rep at the modeling agency had sent me out on this call and told them that I could act. And I thought, well, you know, in the movie, my mother's dying of cancer, so if I cry and say the words right, maybe they'll look at me twice.
Mm-hmm.
So every time I went, and every time I got really into it and imagined it was my own mother, and I cried and I said the words. So each time I cried and said the words, 7 callbacks, cried and said the words. They hired me, flew me to Montreal to shoot it, still had cold feet, had me do another screen test while I was there. So I just kept doing it. Finally, the day comes for this big scene, and they did Jill Clayburgh's coverage first. She played my mother, and so I cried mm-hmm. for her. And then they did the little boy's coverage. He played my younger brother, and I cried for him. And they turned around on my coverage, and the director was afraid that I was all cried out.
Uh-huh.
And I wasn't. So he walked by me, and he pushed me. Like, he physically shoved me. And
oh,
I was so shocked and so startled. Like, I was, like, really green, young actor. Like I said, never acted before, never planned on acting. And this man was trying to do one of those manipulations to upset me, when all it did was really make me upset and angry, like upset
right.
in a different way. And then,
mm-hmm.
you know, the care and makeup team had to take me aside, like the people that you trust, and they had to calm me down and so I could finally get back into it and calm down being shoved by someone. I was so shocked. And then I cried. Then I cried again for their coverage. But I thought, you know, how dare you?
I mean, that would have been my initial reaction too if somebody shoved me. I mean, that just didn't make any sense whatsoever. Maybe it worked with some people, but I can't see it working for myself either.
No, I wasn't terribly impressed. But
no. Now, when you were a model, you went to Japan for a while and you learned how to speak some Japanese. Do you still remember it?
Yeah, you know, I only remember one phrase. It's been so long. We learned Japanese so easily there because you needed it. Like, if you had
mm-hmm.
to look up where's the bathroom in your translation book, you only had to look it up once or twice to remember it. It was a need-to-know basis.
Mm-hmm.
So that is, you know, I said I only remember one phrase, but I remember this too. It's a toilet wa doko desu ka? So it's like, you know, they called it the toilet. And where is it? Wa doko desu ka? The question.
Oh.
You know, it's the phrase.
That's a very important phrase to have to remember.
It is. And, you know, things like how much does this cost? And may I have mm-hmm. the receipt? The receipt was yoshisho kurusai. And, but the phrase that I remember was, kiyonashishi no kute kurusai, hai, arigashimasu. Which meant, can I please have the pictures? Would you send me the pictures from today's shoot? Because we all needed the pictures, you know?
Yeah,
we had to depend on them in those days. It was 84, I went for 2 months, and over 85, 86, I went for 4 months. And so it was not the digital age, and we had to rely on the magazines to send the tear sheets to our agents so that we could put them in our modeling portfolios, in our books.
Yeah, and being so far away, you know, you definitely need to get them before you go back, if at all possible, so that way you know you have them.
Exactly. No, it was imperative. But, you know, you got lucky sometimes and you didn't other times. But that was the time of my life. I loved it. Well, I had a lot of lucky times in my life. I have a lot of examples springing to mind.
Right.
But, no, I had a great time. I had a great, great, great time.
How different is it there from the U.S.?
Astoundingly different, or it was. I don't know what's going on now. As I said, it's
mm-hmm.
been a very long time. But at the time, if I walked down the street and babies looked at me, they would cry and dogs barked. Babies cried and dogs barked. Like, who is this thing that looks like this that's so different.
Well, being blonde and everything, too, I guess it would really throw them off.
Yes, yes. It was very, very different. And there are things I absolutely love about the culture, and then there are things that were so different from the Western culture that I grew up in that I had to remind myself that I'm a visitor here and this is, you know, not my culture, and to respect that.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was just very different and not the way we did things at home, and I, you know, didn't love everything about it, but then there were so many things about the Japanese culture that I loved so much, and beautiful, beautiful aspects of their culture, the temples and the people. I mean, it really was a very, very safe place to go as an 18-year-old who'd never been away from home.
Yeah, yeah.
So
that makes it frightening sometimes.
There were still places where we were told not to go, you know, places
mm-hmm.
where obviously, you know, you just shouldn't go. But in general, it was a very, very safe place for me to be, you know, off to on my own.
Yeah.
Well, you know, this is shifting gears a little bit, but you currently have two films in post-production, and one being the Carrie remake.
Oh, yeah.
And talk a little bit about this. I mean, I'm excited about this because, gosh, anytime you take a movie and you remake it into modern day, it's always neat to see, you know, how it's recreated. But is it very similar to the original version, or are there a lot of new things being added?
Well, you know what, I can't exactly address that because I saw the original version years and years and years ago, scared the pants off me, and then I didn't want to revisit that when I auditioned and then when I got the part. You know, I didn't want anybody else's version of my character to get in my head.
Mm-hmm.
So I did not rewatch it. I will at some point, but I haven't yet. So I only know the material that we were dealing with, which I believe was very similar, but I don't know what exactly the, you know, the script or the brilliant director was putting in. You know, Kimberly Pierce, who I was so incredibly honored and thrilled to work with. You know, she's a very big deal. A very big deal. And then, you know, to get to work with Julianne Moore, it was just so lovely for me. It was, you know, I mean, I've been doing this for a long time, but I am absolutely, like, I am not worthy to work with certain people, and Julianne Moore is definitely one of them. It was a great day. It was an amazing day.
I love you both.
thank you. Oh, she's incredible. Just to watch the way she interacted with Kimberly and so the way she worked, and oh my God, she's just they're wonderful. They're wonderful. It was very exciting for me. Very exciting. Although, you know, they did what they always do. They always, always change your lines, and you go in very, very prepared. And I don't know if you guys know, I had a really, really big car accident a long time ago. It was in 1988, and my memory was damaged. So before that, I used to memorize a script, reading it once, maybe twice, and I'd know my lines and everybody else's lines. And then it was my task to try not to remind others of their lines when they forgot them, because I just had such a great memory for lines. I don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
And after my car accident, I had to work very hard to remember my lines, I think, as probably most people do. But I really had a severe memory problem after my car accident, I guess severe concussion or whatever, but I couldn't talk. I didn't remember how to say, you know, the word for table or chair or knife or fork. I had to
relearn
all of that. Yeah, it was pretty dramatic. So when I go on set, and as they do so often, it's not an anomaly. It's not a surprise. They change the lines. They go, you know, we're adding a bit here. We're doing a bit there. They change it in the working of. And then, you know, I'm just trying to keep my inner panic completely at bay and not look like an amateur. You know, it's like I was prepared. Now I have to memorize this really, really quickly, which is a challenge for me. And incorporate the new things that they're doing and incorporate the way Julianne is doing her, you know, her side of it. And I don't know. It was a very exciting day. It was a challenging day. And I cannot wait to see which takes they chose.
Well, one thing that I have always been, you know, very intrigued by is, as a viewer of horror films, you know, it'll scare the pants off of you almost. But what is it like to actually be in a horror film and act out the scenes that are supposed to, you know, come across as being very frightening to the average viewer?
Well, let me see, how can I answer that question? First of all, I can't give anything away. I mean, you know that I did a scene with Julianne Moore. That's not giving any plot things away. So I won't address it with Carrie, which then makes me talk about other horror films that I've done. And really, I've only done comedy horror. Mm-hmm. So that's a little different. You know, Prom Night 3 and The Brain were not really scary movies. They're ridiculous movies, and that's the point. You know, the brain grows to mammoth proportions and eats a town. And so, you know, the guy that I'm working with at one point, you know, puts his head inside the big rubber brain, and then they shoot another shot where his feet and is sticking out with put his little running shoes on the fake legs.
Yeah.
It was so, so ridiculous. And then the director comes up to me. Oh, that's one occasion. You talked about crying. The director came up to me and said, it wasn't scripted. He said, okay, now I want you to cry. The brain is breaking into the library where you're hiding in the school, and now you have to cry.
Oh, God.
And I think I was a little saucy, and I said to him, okay, you get one take of me crying.
Yeah.
One take. And they put, I don't know how I did it, they put the slate up. Do you know what a slate is? That's that clapperboard thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They put the slate up in front of my face and slapped it, and I cried for one take, and then they cut, and I went, that's all you get.
Yeah.
And then we went back to the ridiculousness of this fun comedy horror, just absolute silliness. Right? But that's it. It's incredibly tongue-in-cheek. And I just didn't want to be running around and then crying every day, because it's incredibly taxing emotionally.
Right.
It's draining. It's exhausting. It's why, you know, I've done so many of these Lifetime movies where I'm the, you know, poor, not well woman who decides to, you know, kill either her ex or someone she has her eye on and thinks should be her ex or something. I don't know.
Right.
But I've done so many of them where I have to cry for the whole movie, and it's exhausting. And
yeah.
So I was thrilled with the last two, the producer, Pierre David, who I've done so many projects for. I think the first time we worked together was 1987. And so we go way back. So he hires me a lot. Sometimes it's for a teeny bit, it's a cameo, and other times it's a lead, and then other times it's reporting. And the last two that I've done for him, I got to be the friend of the poor woman who loses her mind. So, like, you know, Sydney Penney gets to cry
I
for the
I was going to say, yes, I love that movie.
I loved it so much. I said I get to act like a man. Nobody expects a guy to cry. You know, you see all these big stars in movies, these guys and their daughter is kidnapped or their wife is killed, and they look up tragically, and there's no tears on their face, and nobody says a word. Whereas if you're a woman, they'd be like, where are the tears?
Right.
You know, like, so I just had so much fun working with Sydney and Cameron and doing those movies where I don't have to be this traumatized woman that bawls for, you know, the entire movie and every scene. It was like a walk in the park. So I couldn't even believe
it.
Yeah,
we were rooting for you for different reasons in that movie, because you were trying to save your ex, Cameron. So
yeah.
And Sydney Penney was the whack job. So.
Yes, I was so pleased. So please not to have to cry. I can't even tell you. It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
I've had to cry so much in my career. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Ridiculous. And it's not usually like on The Brain where they just put the clapper up and then you do it and you stop. Usually you just have to torture yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very therapeutic. You really have to, you know, mine, like I said, you have to mine your emotions and figure out what is really meaningful to me. Like, you know, at one point I came across this thought, I realized that my father saved my emotional life, because I was adopted. So my father and my mother, you know, I could have ended up anywhere, but I ended up in an amazing family with loving, supportive, wonderful people. And, you know, I could have ended up anywhere. And, you know, so for that moment to strike you to realize, because otherwise you just go about your life and don't really think about that.
Exactly.
And take it for granted. You take it for granted. So there are many things as actors that we have to analyze and look at under a magnifying glass that maybe other people don't really have to do. I have no idea. I don't know if other people look at things that actually like disturb. I think people mostly try not to think about things that upset them. Like, I think
that is very true.
I think that if they start to touch on something that upsets them, they go away from that. Whereas as actors, we have to explore that and find out why does that upset us, and what is the meaning behind it, And I don't know, maybe we're well-adjusted because of it, or maybe we're more messed up. I don't know.
Yeah, it could work either way. Because I know that when I get upset, if I see something on the news or something happened in my life, I mean, I just go right to the comedies, you
right.
know. Forget
very,
it. I don't want to feel thoughtful. This. I don't want to think about that. I want to laugh, you know.
Right, right. I know, and I did that for so many years. I was a very guilty meat eater. I knew there were, you know, terrible things going on, but I just ignored it. And lately I've been forcing myself to investigate, to look at the pictures, to read the articles, to look at the videos, and I'm horrified. And I'm not saying that I'm a vegetarian or a vegan, but I have, mm-hmm. I've worked about 90%, I would say 90% of the meat out of my diet because I'm just for the sake of animal cruelty.
Right.
You know, for no
well,
other
if
but,
I think about what I'm cooking, I can't cook it and I can't eat it.
Right.
So that'll happen to me, you know, quite a few times. My husband will come home and he'll be like, okay, I thought you were going to make some chicken. I said, you know what? I thought about where it came from. I had these pictures flashing. I can't do it. You're going to have to do it. And he does it.
Yeah.
Without thought. Now, speaking of comedies, when I was doing research on things that you had been in and movies and that, I came across something called The Nanny Insanity. Now, that
oh,
looks like a really
yes.
funny movie. Can you tell us more about that?
Oh, my goodness. That was so much fun. So, so, so much fun. Well, I played a fairly straight role, the straight man, in that movie, and it was about this nanny that was, what was she? God, we're going back a while. She was Russian.
Russian or
German?
Yeah, Russian because the other person was from Ukraine, for real, I think. So I think it was Russian.
Right, right. I think they were Russian. I think they released it under the title Domestic Import. And
okay.
We did it, and the making of it was Nanny Insanity. And Larry Dorff, who is an incredible comic actor, played my husband. And Ala Carrot, oh my gosh, she played Sophia, the nanny, and she was just out of her mind as far as, you know, my character's perspective was. But she was, how do I describe it? She had the craziest outfit. Then she had this verve for life. She just was over the top, and she mm-hmm. had to help every member of her family. So it was like they just, you know, the Russians were popping out of the cupboards. You know, she was
yeah.
just helping everybody. You know the treat for me on that? Mindy Sterling played my mother, and Howard Hessman played my father.
Oh, so cool.
That was so incredibly cool. I watched WKRP in Cincinnati
yeah,
when I was a
course.
Kid.
Yeah.
I couldn't
mm-hmm.
believe that Howard Hessman was right in front of me. Playing
yeah.
my father. I can't believe it. Mindy Sterling had given me so many things, and she's such a dear. I jokingly sent her Mother's Day cards for a few years after that.
Oh, that's so nice.
So I still occasionally write her an email and say, hi, Mom. She's, you know, brilliant. But that was just a wacky, wacky, wacky project and really, really, really fun. Incredibly fun.
I need to see that because it sounded so great. It sounded so funny when I was reading about it, and it wasn't one that I had heard of before.
It was really fun, and it was, like, based on the true story of the writer, Andrea Melnick. She
mm-hmm.
had gone through this and then, you know, penned the story, and I believe she had written it and thrown it in a drawer for years and years and years and then pulled it back out and tried to pursue it a little bit, and then she couldn't believe it. She was there on set, and these people were, like, you know, I'm there playing her. And these actors, and we were shooting that on the Sony lot. I mean, I think, gosh, what were the really big, I think they shot Gone with the Wind on that lot. I mean, it was such a big deal. It was
right.
incredible. It was really fun. Really, really, really fun.
Well, of all the things that you've done, I mean, you've acted in so many movies and television, and, I mean, you've done, gosh, it seems like you've done it all. Do you have a particular experience through your career that just kind of stands out for you as being kind of that just special moment that is most memorable for you?
I have a few pops of mine. I remember when we went to the Monte Carlo Television Festival, and it was just what I call one of those red carpet moments. You know, like the rest
mm-hmm.
of the time I live my life very normally. I don't club, I don't party, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I have had a couple of red carpet moments, and one was in Monte Carlo, and you just look out. You first of all, you're in this incredibly beautiful place, and you're flown into Nice and then helicoptered to Monte Carlo. And then, you know, the paparazzi are there, and there are hundreds of them taking pictures of you. And I, being a big dork, got my camera out and stood up on one of the railings and took pictures of them. You know, just an idiot. And it's a great time there. And, you know, and they selected a person to sit with Prince Albert, and who was going to sit with Prince Albert. And I got selected, which meant that my producers and my co-stars and I got to sit at the table. So also there was John Favreau and his girlfriend, who was a doctor who he then married, I believe, and Penelope Ann Miller. So that was our table. So it was a pretty good table, I would say. And yep. We went out with the prince afterwards dancing. And, oh, my gosh, that was pretty fun. Another red carpet moment was when Whale Music opened the Toronto Film Festival. So that was a big deal because then you've got, you know, Raul Julia in town, Robert Downey Jr. in town. They're all in town
promote
their films, and they all come to the opening night party. So there were 5,000 people at the party that night. I think they said there were. Like, they had put tents up down by the lake, and there were just, like, an incredibly ridiculous number of people. Like, the entire film festival turns out pretty much for this giant opening night party after some of them have seen the film. And it was my movie. It was me, Maury Chaykin, and Paul Gross, and directed by the amazing Richard Lewis, which was an incredible time making that movie, you know. And Maury Chaykin, who's no longer with us, we miss him dearly. Such a brilliant, brilliant actor. But that was an incredible moment in my career. And, of course, that got me all sorts of attention from the States. And I had, you know, three different companies pursuing me for representation. And so I had to choose one.
That's a problem to have.
So I didn't know how to choose. So I went, okay, well, that agency over there represents Jack Nicholson. So if they're good enough for Jack, they're good enough for me.
Right?
Yeah, really.
So I went with them. So yeah, that was a big deal. That ended up really changing. Oh, and then we were up for Best Picture in Canada, and Maury won Best Actor, which
wonderful.
He then, you know, shared with me, and the camera comes in and me bawling my eyes out. So, you know, it was a really pivotal moment in my career.
That's wonderful.
Well, speaking of your career, you know, you've acted with so many different people. And do you have, you know, a particular favorite that you just really enjoyed? I mean, I know it's got to be difficult, but is there one
the most recent thrill? I mean, because Julianne Moore was the job before that, but the most recent double thrill was I was on an episode of Hannibal, which is a new show that I believe premieres in March. So I'm in episode 6, so I think that means it would air mid-May. And Hannibal stars the wonderful Hugh Dancy, who is married to Claire Danes, and I followed her and I followed him, so that was a really big thrill. And also Lawrence Fishburne. I mean, my scenes were with Hugh and Lawrence, and that was one of the ones I was referring to earlier where I had to cry for 9 hours because actually in the scene I'm just a little teary. I'm upset, I'm worked up, but I'm not bawling. But to maintain that in between, I had to cry my eyes out when the camera wasn't rolling and just stay in that place. And I'm there working with Lawrence Fishburne and Hugh Dancy. It was, they pinched me. It was the day of the election. It was the day of the last election. And I don't know if I should say who I was rooting for.
Well,
should I?
Maybe, I don't know.
Maybe
I don't know.
Not.
Is that
I don't
going to give
anyone.
Away anything?
I don't want to offend anyone, but let's just say that I actually at one point was like, I had exhausted the emotion due to, you know, the actual scene, and then I had thought about other things, and I tied other things. And at one point, for a couple of takes, I just cried at the thought of a certain person becoming, you know, that's just going to give it away too. Anyway, I used other things to cry. I just used other things to cry. I was just, a little horrified and terrified. Anyway, Lawrence Fishburne and Hugh Dancy, incredible, incredible treat for me. Just a really, how do you say it? It's just so exciting. I'm just in such awe of their work, you know?
Right, right. They're brilliant, that's for sure.
Exactly. I just, yeah, absolutely.
Well, you know what I'm in awe of is the fact that you have been at this for quite some time. I mean, and you still are just as humble and grounded and in awe of who you're in the movies and who you're, you know, you star in the television shows with. I mean, you do not take anything for granted, and it's amazing, you know, your passion. It's like earlier in the interview when you were talking about your first day on the GH set and how excited you were and you couldn't quit smiling. And it's almost like that has carried with you through your career because you've had so many different experiences. And it's just kind of kept that. I imagine your adrenaline has just constantly been on this emotional high, you know. So I don't know how you've been able to cry at all.
Right.
It's a roller coaster. You got to pay your ticket, and you got to get on that ride, and you got to take it.
That's right. Now, you've been, with being in so many movies and with so many co-stars and that, if you were to write your own movie, who would you choose as your co-star, and what would that movie be about?
You know, I was just thinking about that today. Oh, my gosh, and I was trying to remember. There have been so many different times when I've had actors that I love to work with so much, and I thought, you know, if I ever have the power to choose who I work with, you know, I've got to, you know, we've got to write a movie with these people. I've got to produce a movie with these people. And I was thinking about that today, and I was like, I can't remember. There's just so many great people, as you said, so many great people. It would be, I don't know, it would be a real conundrum. You know, I guess it would just come down to the script and casting and then at that point really putting my thinking cap on and trying to remember, like, who do I know, who have I worked with that I really, really, really want to play that character? Because casting is everything.
Exactly.
Casting is so important. So it has to be the right person. And hopefully we'll be having that discussion on another show when I've written the script.
Oh.
There you go. At least we know you're thinking about it already.
Yeah.
For a long time. We all must. Yes.
Yes. That would be phenomenal. Now, you stay so incredibly busy. So when you have downtime, if you ever have downtime, what do you do for fun? What do you enjoy doing?
My favorite thing, I love it so much, is scuba diving.
Oh, really?
Wow.
Yes. Yeah, I could email you pictures of me with sharks. Oh, it's just phenomenal. I love it.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, wow.
You have a lot of courage.
You know, in Hawaii, the white tips don't generally bite people. And I was
Just being underwater like that.
No, that's not for me.
Oh,
when I was a kid, I used to hold my breath as long as I could, pretend I was a mermaid and pretend I lived down. My mother said her whole job when I was little was to sit on the beach with a book and just look up constantly and make sure that my head was bobbing up sometimes because I was in the water all day. Every day, I love swimming so much, and I just wanted to stay down there. So it was at the top of my list of things to do for years. It took me about 10 years of concentrating on, I really want to do it. When am I going to do it? And then I got certified, and I got advanced certified at the same time because I thought, well, I want to do all the other things. Mm-hmm. I want to do drift dives and night dives. So why don't I, while I was there in Hawaii getting certified, why don't I just study these extra things and take these extra tests and become advanced certified at the same time? How exciting!
Right.
What a great idea. Although it's really exhausting because every night you have to read chapters and chapters and chapters and really know them, and then you go in and get tested in the morning and you have to pass the test before you can dive that day. So it just extended the sort of grueling aspect of getting certified by doing the advanced at the same time, but who cares? It's done. I love it. I love it. Giving a
well,
shout
when you
out
put your head
to
something, you really do it. You go all the way, and that's a good thing.
Thanks. That's nice.
Now, if you had not pursued acting, or rather acting pursued you, whichever the case may be, what do you think you would be doing for a living today?
Fascinating question. I come from a family of professionals, so I never thought about doing anything artistic like this. You know, my father's an engineer. His degree is in engineering physics, and my brother is an engineer. My sister's a lawyer. They're nurses and doctors and teachers in my family. So there was no doubt that I would go to university, as we say in Canada. There's, you know, wasn't the same distinction in the States as going to college is going to university, but here there was different. It was like colleges. It used to be different. I don't know what it is now. But anyway, I was no doubt I was going to go to university. And so that first movie job came up the summer between high school and university. And I thought, well, you know, what a lovely thing to do for the summer.
summer holiday and didn't at all think it was going to change my life. But then it did. I was actually at my first day of university and so excited. I mean, really, talk about overeager. I'm taking notes and everything the first day. Nobody's taking notes the first day. I'm so excited. And I got home that night and I got a part. I got a lead in a film. So my second job offer was for a lead in a film, something that I had seen. The casting people in town wanted to see who this nobody was that got this plum role that they'd been pushing the regulars for. So I ended up going in to meet people and reading what was on their desk. What was on their desk was current material. So I got this lead in a film, and I thought, okay, I will get my tuition back, and I'll do this film, and then next semester I'll go to school. And I did that. And then next semester I picked my courses and I paid my tuition, and then I got another lead in a film. So I have a very strange career. People ask me, how do you get into acting? And I say, I'm so sorry, I just really don't know.
Yeah.
didn't happen, and it was not the usual case. So I did that, and then it kept happening. I kept paying my tuition and having to get it back until I think it was 2.5 years later. So let's see. Yeah, I was doing a movie called Cold Comfort, and I had said after that movie, it was my fifth lead, I believe, and I said after this movie, I am taking a break and I'm going to school. And I got in a huge car accident and was in the hospital for 3 months and again had to get my tuition back. So it was not meant to be for me to go to school. I still go. Yeah. I took Italian at UCLA and I took anthropology at Valley College. You know, like I just like learning. I like going to school. I like the environment and it I don't know, it really feeds something in me. I really, really love it. But it was just not meant to be that I would do the normal university, you know, route.
Yeah.
I just get to take courses occasionally, sadly.
But that's good, too, because you keep your mind fresh and you learn new things. And, you know, I still do a class every now and again online, or I go to the local junior college over here and do something, you know. So
yeah, my mother was the same
important.
Way. My mother used to walk down the halls at high school. They'd offer adult courses, and I'd see my mother in the halls at high school. And you'd think I should have been mortified, but I was like, hi, Mom. You know, she was always taking courses, always.
Well, you know, I don't think we ever stop learning. You know, I'm in a school myself right now. You know, I majored in business, and never got to get my degree after high school, and I always said, if I had that opportunity later in life, I would definitely take advantage of it. And it did present itself, so I took very much poured myself into it. I'm in my third year, it's funny to hear you talk your enthusiasm about it because I have the same enthusiasm. And I was just telling Pam earlier today that I looked, you know, online because all my courses are online, and I looked and they had put the new curriculum up for the spring semester, and I was like, yes, you know. So as intense as last semester was, I was glad to see new material for a change.
She was more excited that it was an easy class.
Oh yeah,
don't let her fool you.
I was thinking,
I'm fine. She's still human. It's okay.
Yeah, I was taking three classes in two were 16 weeks and one was 8 weeks, but at some certain points it was very intense because I was
three
classes.
That's so great.
But I have two and it's I can breathe, you know, and the content's not going to be hard. So I love learning and I love school. And so I really can appreciate you and anyone that says that because.
Oh, I did too. I took piano and I got to actually practice on a real piano because I grew up taking piano lessons, but it was an organ in my parents' house. So it was a split level keyboard and not the real weighted keys. So I took piano. I was like, oh my gosh, you get to just go into the practice rooms and use the pianos as much as you want. It's so incredible. But of course, that thing happens, you know, where you sign up for a course and you never get to finish it because you get a job. So, you know, I'm signing up for courses because I would never be able to finish. You know, I was taking, you know, painting classes and I couldn't finish because I got a job and, you know, the piano classes. So it's like, if it's ever slow, just sign up for some courses.
Yeah, exactly. That is so true.
Yeah, and you never know. You may end up doing a different career, too. You know, if you get into something else, try something new and might find that you like it and you want to do that.
There are so many things to do. If I ever hit another really slow period, like, you know, the slow periods in my career, you have to, like, carry on and, you know, just hang on through them. But, you know, the writer's strike, the SAG dispute, then
yeah.
the recession, that was a big slow period. But things were very different down there at that time. Whereas now, you know, being up here and there's so many courses I'd love to take. There's so many things I'd love to do. I mean, one of the things is getting my PI license, you know, to be a private investigator. That was
really?
I've downloaded them. I've downloaded. I know I sound like an absolute fool, an idiot right now.
No, not at all. I think that's so cool.
The U.S. one and the Canadian one, because, you know, I'm dual citizen, so I could do it both places, you know. And it would just be, like, great fodder for scripts. And, oh, I just, there's so many things I want to do. It's ridiculous.
And you'll fit them all in. I have no doubt about that.
You'll see.
Yeah,
if really. I keep having this luck with my career, I don't have time to do anything other than my day job sort of thing. But we'll see.
Well, I want to say thank you so much for joining us tonight, Cynthia. It's been such a pleasure speaking with you and just thinking back to the old days. And I wondered one thing, too, with web series being so more, what should I say, they're more popular now and there's more of them, would you ever consider doing that?
Absolutely. It would fall into like any other job that I consider. It would depend on the quality of the material, who I'm working with, but absolutely, it just falls into like the norm. It's not quite the norm yet, but it's, I don't know if it's getting there or if it'll, you know, fade away or what the next thing will be, you know, but absolutely, it falls right into what is the quality of what you're offering and who am I working with.
Yeah, it seems to be getting more and more popular in a lot of the actors, the soap actors, whether they're working or not working on a soap, are seeming to go towards that.
Right.
So I think
right.
it's very exciting. And now they're talking about possibly bringing All My Children and One Life to Live back on the web. So we're ecstatic.
Wow. Wouldn't that be great? Oh.
It would. It would. Because it's been such a hole in my life because I grew up on ABC soaps, you know.
Yeah.
And
so many people would be so thrilled.
Oh, I know. And God forbid General Hospital ever got canceled. You know, I would hope that, you know, AMC and One Life to Live would set the web series up and let it be popular, and then GH could go on there, too. We've lost too many soap operas.
We will see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. Now, if we could ever dig Faith back up... would you consider going back to GH?
Oh, are you kidding? Absolutely. If Faith didn't actually die, you know, when we were shooting it, I pulled a practical joke. I kept sitting up. They had my body covered in a sheet, and I kept going, I'm feeling much better. I'm not dead yet. I'm feeling much better. You know, it was like really kind of bold of me to do that because the camera's rolling, and that costs money. But, you know, I was on my way out, and I had to pull the joke.
I would love to see
so
that.
Either
oh my God!
Dead or twin sister or her surprisingly similar cousin comes to town, and yes, of course I would. Of course, you know. I mean, I loved that show so much.
They are bringing back so many of the old characters, the core characters to GH.
Well, put a bug in somebody's ear, you know.
Yes, I was going to say, Frank Valentini and Ron Carlovati are on Twitter, and we're constantly saying, bring back this person, bring back that person, bring back this person. And so, you know, I don't see why we couldn't put your name out there.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
That's right.
And are you ever going to get on Twitter? Some people have asked.
I just have been so busy with everything that I've been a little intimidated by the commitment of doing that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like I really sort of, you know, I used to have a website. Well, it still exists, but it's not long neglected at CynthiaPreston.com. So don't even go there. It's really old. But before Facebook, I would correspond with people. So I have, you know, particularly a core group of girls that I would correspond with and that would come to all the fan club weekends and just made it really, really fun. And one of them posted a picture of us recently on Facebook, and they were all saying, oh, we all made such great friends because of it, because they were all from different parts of the country, I think. And, you know, I chimed in and said, you guys were the greatest. You made the message board so much fun. And look, everybody's caught on now. Everybody's doing it. They just call it Facebook. Because it's just that, you know, technology and just that interaction is so much fun. And we were doing it through my message board, we called it, on my webpage, which, like I said, well, there's Facebook now. You just do it. You just correspond. It's more natural. I don't have to take 6 hours on Sunday to answer questions. They just pop up all the time, and you respond to people. So it's changed. You know, everything's constantly changing. But it's always fun.
Well, you might want to stick your toe in the water and see if you're the type of person that would like to be tweeting. You know, it's not something that you have to do all the time, but I see actors that have just, you know, gotten on there, and then all of a sudden they're tweetaholics, or some of them only tweet once in a while. But it's nice because you get to interact with the fans as well, and, I mean, thank God for Blog Talk that we can do this.
I've never done it. I haven't followed tweets, and I have no idea. So I guess I'm a little behind the curve. I apologize.
There you go. There's another course you can take to offer that.
I don't know.
We'll give you a crash course if you ever decide. Just give us a call.
I'll call you. Yeah, I'll call you. About that tweet thing.
That's like the checks in the mail, right?
Right. No. Oh, no. Come on, give me some credit.
I am always kidding. Well, again, thank you for joining us. It was such a pleasure speaking with you.
Oh, you're lovely. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And please let us know when you have some more things that are out there. You know, we're watching your IMDb and seeing that you have those things coming up, the shows and movies. And,
yes.
And we'd love to have you back and talk about that once they're out.
You.
And you can talk about it.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I think they pushed Carrie release to next Halloween was the last thing I heard, but I don't know. So we'll see. I'll call you. I'll let you know.
Well, it seems like an appropriate time, right?
It does. It seems like a really great choice. So, we'll see what happens. We'll see if I make the final edit, see how many scenes of mine are still in the movie.
Oh, no, don't say that. You'll be in it.
That's an actor's life. It's always you have to see how they decided to cut the movie. Absolutely.
I know. Well, let's hope for the best.
Thank you.
So
yes.
Thank you again, and God bless you,
so
and we wish you much success in 2013 and beyond.
Oh, thank you, and to you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You have a good night.
All right, ladies.
Bye-bye.
All righty.
Bye. Well, that was so much fun. Oh, my gosh. That was so much fun. You have no idea. I know because you didn't watch GH when she was on, and you've seen the videos and that, but all the flashbacks of her being on General Hospital, but not only that, all the Lifetime movies that I watched with her in it were just flashing through my head as we're talking. I just love her. She's a phenomenal actress. She's successful at no matter what she does and what type of role it is, but I have to say she is the best and the baddest villainess of daytime and even prime time. I love her.
Yeah, the video clips that I saw, I was like, wow.
Yeah.
and that's one of those things, you know, where having watched CBS Daytime and thinking of Sheila Carter being the equivalent, I'm thinking, wow. You know, it'd be so cool if somehow, you know, the soap could script where those two meet. And, you know, because supposedly Sheila Carter is dead as well. So, you know, that would be, they both rise from the dead. I mean, I could, oh, gosh. But, yes, I mean, I was so impressed with her acting, and that's why I was really curious, you know, how do you get in the moment, especially when you're in an intense scene that way, and you have to do certain things that, you know, in your normal character as a person of who you are in real life, is just off the beaten path. So, you know, it would take a lot, I would imagine, but it just shows the immense talent that she has. So what a lovely person. Really enjoyed it.
That's so true. And she's the total opposite of being a villain. You know, she's so sweet. You just can't imagine just speaking with her for this past hour that she can play somebody so mean and so heartless.
I was like, really? So, I'm gonna go back and watch a lot of those, those episodes with her in it, full episodes, not just the clips, to get a full feel for her character and just see the role that she played in to the fullest max. But yeah, what a great person. Great interview.
Yeah, and I would love when she comes back because I'd love to see what she does with Carrie and that. You know,
oh, that movie in itself is going to be good because, no doubt, the first one was absolutely frightening. It was horrifically frightening. And, you know, and to think that, you know, they've done a remake, which now in modern day, you can imagine how over the top it is going to be compared to, you know, the 70s make, you know, Split.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they have access to so many more things to make it even scarier and more realistic.
Yeah, definitely. So it should be quite interesting. I hope, look forward to that coming out. That might be one I have to see.
And I really do have to get you that Shootout episode. I forgot to look for it to give it to you, and where she gets killed in the church by Jason. Oh, my God. That when I say intense, it was intense, and I'm yelling at the TV going, get her, Jason, get her, Jason.
Oh,
but it was phenomenal. I mean, she should have won an Emmy for that. It was just, oh, my God, it was so good. But, yeah, that's me, the soap fan. And so I will let you go ahead and announce our next guest.
Well,
on January 12th at 5 p.m. Eastern time on Saturday, sorry.
I know. I was trying to be like coy and add an element of suspense. I failed.
Oh,
miserably.
Okay.
Sorry,
I ruined that for you.
Okay. That didn't work. We won't do that again. No, seriously, our next guest is going to be Eileen Carey, and she is going to be on Saturday at 5 p.m. Eastern. I'm all turned around now. We've been talking about villains and scary people, and I'm thinking about Carey, and it's just got me all discombobulated. But needless to say, that Eileen Carey is one of California country's most popular singer-songwriters, recently released the first single off of her fourth CD. The CD is called Let It Go, and the single is a remake of The Pretenders' Don't Get Me Wrong, and I have listened to it. I love it. It is it is country, but it's, it's one of those songs, I've always loved that song anyway, but it's one of those songs that just makes you really wonder why it has not been remade into a country song before now. But Eileen has a neat voice, and she really does a great job with the song. And so we're going to be talking with her on Saturday, and I'm really looking forward to that. So that should.
And
be
we have a
interview.
Surprise for Sunday, but we're not going to tell you yet.
Yes. We have a surprise for Sunday, and I'm so excited. Yes, indeed. And let's see. And then coming tomorrow, we have an announcement. Are we announcing tonight? No, Pam? Yes,
no,
maybe?
No.
Okay.
We're waiting for
okay,
tomorrow.
Well, we will be on the lookout tomorrow for a big announcement from Take Two Radio and Jam and Jukebox. And that's all I'm going to say. But we've got a big announcement on tomorrow. We've got a big guest coming Sunday night at 5 p.m. And we have got, big guests kind of littered throughout the rest of this month and into early February. So we are working hard to bring you some of the best of the best. And and I'm just excited thinking about it, I tell you.
I know, I am
amazing.
Too.
I mean, I'm just always amazed at the people that you say, hey, let's work on them, or let's see if we can get him or her. And it always amazes me how it just happens. It just works, and we do it, and time and again. And, this is just such a fun show. And we have so much to bring to people. And just when you think, it's gotten as good as it can get, and then something else comes up, and it's like, wow.
Yeah. I mean, we had a wow today, too, if you think about it. When we got our reply from somebody, we had a wow.
Yes, it was a big wow. A very big wow indeed, and I was blown away, actually. So I'm just really excited because fans out there, not fans of our show, but fans of who's coming are going to be like, oh, my gosh, it's just going to be that whole starstruck thing. So,
right.
So needless to say, that's, that's a big thing. So be on the lookout. And if you do not follow us on Twitter currently and would like to, you can follow us at Take Two Radio or Dawn Take Two Radio. And that's where you'll get the latest breaking, you know, news and announcements from us as they happen. And you can also check our website. It's constantly being updated. That's take2radio.com. And also, we also have something else new. We have just started for 2013. We now have a YouTube channel for Take Two Radio. It's The Take Two Radio over at YouTube. And look it up. And what we're doing is all of our interviews, we're creating a video and we're launching them there to try to reach the YouTube audience. But also, you know, check them out. You know, it's kind of neat to see these, you know, interviews set to video and music and everything. And so I think you'll be pleasantly surprised. And, of course, give us feedback. Let us know what you think. But more importantly, if there is someone that you would like for us to try to get on the show, do not hesitate to let us know, because you can tweet us, you can send us an email at info@take2radio.com, and we will be happy to do what we can. Because, you know, as much as we like to do this for you guys and make it exciting for you all, it's always exciting for Pam and I. It's a lot of hard work, but we love what we do. So we're glad to bring you this, you know, what we can and who we can all the time.
Most definitely. Excuse me. And also, Dawn has her own show. It's Jammin' Jukebox, and she plays indie artists from around the world, and she also has the pleasure of interviewing some of them, and it's on Blog Talk as well, so you can look that up under Jammin' Jukebox, and you'd be amazed at all the wonderful music that she has playing.
Oh, you're too kind.
Yeah. Well, you know, you helped me out here and co-hosting my show, and I think your show is phenomenal, and it the word should be out there, too, no matter what show it
you.
Is.
Thank you. I appreciate
You're
that.
Welcome. You're welcome. And I think, we were supposed to have somebody else call in tonight, but I keep answering this other line here, and I'm not getting an answer. Let me try it one more time.
I think the other line.
Hello?
Hello?
Hi, is this our caller from Soakdom?
Yes, it is, and I've been.
Oh, okay.
Trying to reach out.
I was kept answering the phone, and nobody was answering me back, so I wasn't sure if it was you that was on the line.
Oh. You know what was happening for me? I was listening to the broadcast, and the your other host would like cut out. And then I would hear you say hello, and I thought you were saying hello because the other host cut out.
Oh,
I didn't know
okay.
You were saying hello to me.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, I'm not really
adept
with Blog Talk Radio, so my apologies.
Well, I believe the reason why it sounded like it was cutting out, because when she came on to try to take the call from you, you won't hear the audio, the live stream and audio, so it'll cut in and out when you're switching over like that. So that I apologize for that. But needless to say,
it's all Dawn's fault.
Yeah, blame me. Yeah, it is one of those things. We do have technical difficulties from time to time, but not always. But still, it's always good to know in case there is a problem, we can let Blog Talk know. So, but it's so good to have you with us tonight.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I was listening to a little bit of your interview there with Cynthia Preston. She is very sweet. I have met her, when she was on General Hospital, met her a number of times. She was also instrumental in hosting some fundraising events for some very worthy charities out here in Los Angeles at one point. And so I had a number of occasions to meet her. She is so stunningly beautiful and just very
sweet. Oh, isn't she, though?
Yeah, and very sweet and a very giving young woman. So I was enjoying your conversation with her. That was nice of her to give you guys some time.
Oh, thank you so much. Now, just for our listeners, the guest we're speaking with now, her name is Linda Marshall Smith, and she's the founder of Soakdom.com, and she now has a new venture, and it's ChirpIt.com. So why don't we go ahead and tell our listeners what that's about?
Well, ChirpIt is a new venture. As you said, it's a new technology startup, and we are very, very, very new. We do have a prototype online now, which you can go and visit at chirpit.com, and it's spelled C chirppet.com. And what it is, in essence, is a multi-platform destination for young women to exchange advice in real time on things that matter. So whether it's dating and relationships or fashion and beauty or school or career or sticky situations or whatever it is where you might be experiencing some kind of a dilemma, you can go to the site and post your dilemma, and the community of the rest of the people on the site will weigh in and you know, share their experiences or try to help you out or give you an answer to your problem. So it's a community-based site, and I have been building online communities for a very, very, very long time. I used to work with AOL when AOL still charged by the hour. So,
oh my gosh!
We're talking
wow.
like 96 or 97. So I've been doing this a long time,
mm-hmm.
and we've seen some really amazing things happen in the number of sites and businesses that I've built online, including. People meeting on our message board community and getting married. You know, we were in a
yeah.
dating site, but they met at our site and got married. Other people, you know, meeting groups of soap opera fans who met and would travel, you know, to New York for a fan lunch or travel out to, you know, California for a fan gathering and where they would not go alone. You know, even if they would want to go to a fan lunch in California, if they lived somewhere like in Pennsylvania, you know, they probably wouldn't go. But when they had befriended so many nice people online with their same interest and they were all going, they went together sort of as a group. And those things were kind of organized from the communities at websites that, you know, I had built. So that's very rewarding to see that happen and to see people make friends online.
Most
and,
definitely.
Yeah. And so we decided with this new business to kind of, you know, keep that kind of sentiment going. And, you know, as women, you know, and I hope you would agree with me on this, but, you know, we are nurturers and you know, we nurture by nature. It's kind of what we do.
Yeah.
And we like to help people and, you know, and we did a lot of research and a lot of market testing and spoke to a lot of young women. And, you know, we said, do you, you know, ask for advice? Do you like to give advice to people? And everyone was, you know, yeah, I'm always asking my friends for advice. Or I'm always, you know, I'm the first one to tell somebody. if I think I could help them out with something. So
yeah.
We just decided to take that to an online forum. And as I said, it's very new right now. We do have some users on the site, but I would really love, you know, everyone's help in spreading the word about the site, even this very early version of the site. Things don't work quite well. It's not, you know, 100% functionality-wise yet or anything like that. But it's good enough. You could go there. If you have a question you want asked or if you want to answer someone else's question, you could go and do those things, create a profile and do those things. You could interact with Facebook. So it's, you know, it's very early stage, but, you know, we think it would be a very helpful service, and that's what I'm trying to find out if my thinking is correct. So
I think so. I think this could be big, and especially if it's made for women and by women, it's a big thing, and that you're supporting women in all different respects. Your tabs on there are family, work, school, entertainment, fashion and beauty, relationships, health and fitness, sticky situations, miscellaneous. That's all women. That's all in one day.
Well, and if you drill down, if you hover over some of those main tabs,
mm-hmm.
you'll see it drills down like under the family
yeah.
category. It talks
right.
about recipes, or it talks about parenting, or it talks about sibling rivalry, or there's a lot of different categories there. And,
yeah,
and we're at such an early stage that if people start using the service and feel, oh, well, I would really like to see a category on this, you know,
mm-hmm.
we can always add it because we're, you know, at such an early stage. So I'm really looking to get some people to come on there and start to use it, you know. It's the kind of a thing where if you could ask for advice on Facebook, too, and have your Facebook friends, you know, weigh in. But sometimes if it's a more personal question or an embarrassing question and certainly a sticky situation question.
Right.
You know, you don't want your Facebook friends made to know, because on Facebook you are you.
Right.
On Chirpit, you can be you if you want, but you can also post as a secret identity. So if you don't want anyone to know, or if it's a very embarrassing situation, you know, like you were out at a restaurant and somebody told a joke and you laughed so hard you wet your pants, you know, you don't want you may not want to tell your Facebook friends that, but on Chirpit, people might get a laugh with it. So you might share it on Chirpit under your secret identity.
And so, they would recommend a good brand of Depends or something.
But, you know, so it is very new. There is some content on there now, but I really am looking to just sort of spread the word and start to get, you know, women to start using it, and then to get back to me and let me know what they are having trouble with, if anything, what they might like to see on it, what they like about what's there so far, they want to see categories added, you know, whatever, just to get out there and use it and let me know how they're liking the experience so far.
Yeah, and just from the home page, I see there's questions on there right now, and I see where the answers come up to those off to the side. Mm-hmm. But like one person wrote, any advice for boaters? Summer will be here before we know it.
Right.
The other one is, what's the best way to protect my family? And another one is, got any interior decorating ideas to spruce up the foyer? So, and that decorating one seems to have the most answers right now.
Well, you can actually, if you go over to the right, there's right under where it says need advice.
Mm-hmm.
That is where you would post your question or dilemma. You would click that purple need advice button. And if you're registered and logged in, it would just take you to a field where you would post in a title and post in your question or your dilemma and hit, you know, submit, and you'd be on your way. If you're not registered, it will ask you to register, and if you are registered but not logged in, it'll ask you to log in first. So, if you look under that need advice section, you will see a couple of links. One says random, one says popular, one says – so you can search by those categories, too. If you click on the popular one, you'll see all the threads that will come up that have the most posts on them.
Okay, yeah, I see that now. And it seems pretty user-friendly.
Yeah, that's what we're going for. We actually even want to simplify it a little more. So we are in the, you know, as I said, this is a prototype. So it's a very early version. We are going to build our beta version, shortly. You know, what might actually show up in the beta might be a lot different than what you see now here. But what will happen is, and you know, you told me you were doing your show too on women and empowering women. What the overall sort of grand vision for this site is that it will let every woman know that in some area, some category, she is an expert or an influencer about things.
Right.
Because as people participate on the site and their responses get voted up or down, you know, experts will emerge. And on top of that, if somebody says, oh, this was great advice and I took your advice and this is what happened, well, you not only become an expert in that area, but you become an influencer because you actually had someone act on what you suggested.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
then influencers or top influencers in all the categories will be rewarded in some way. So, for example, if you're a top influencer in the fashion category, well, we might take you or send you to Fashion Week in New York on
Ooh.
Chirp.
Oh, that'd be nice.
Yeah, so there are, you know, prizes and rewards and things that you could, you know, that you could get if you emerge as one of these top people on the site. So I think that sort of would help make the content or the responses or the advice that's given be good advice, because you want to say, you know, you want to say things that are thoughtful rather than just a bunch of hooey.
Yeah.
You know, the hooey.
Exactly. Yeah.
The hooey's going to get voted off. You know, so if you know, like on Facebook, if you can get, you know, you can give it a thumbs up or a thumbs down.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, we have a thing where you could give it a plus or a minus. And if you give a response a plus, you know, it goes up and the color is green and, you know, you can go up with your green numbers. If everybody gives it a minus, well, if there are 50 minuses on a response or 100 minuses, we haven't determined where we would do the cutoff. But if there's like 100 minuses, we're going to delete that. You know, it's just going to...
It makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, because we want the site to be useful and have good information on it. And also fun. I mean, it could be a simple, lighthearted question like, you know, what's the hot color for spring, red or pink?
Right.
You know? Mm-hmm. And people,
yeah, it doesn't have to be a long, drawn-out, hard question.
No. Or, you know, in the dating and relationship, you know, is it okay to break up with a text message or... You know, I want to, you know, get my boyfriend a nice present for Christmas. What should I get him, you know? So whatever. I mean, whatever is on the mind of the person at the time, they could text, they could, you know, mobile smartphone it in because we have a mobile app also, or they could go to the website and ask it, and people will reply, and you'll get your answer. So
well,
I think that is
going to be wonderful for a lot of women to use. And if this is successful, you may even want to think about doing one for men.
Well,
you know, they have a lot of questions about women and what to buy and, you know, things like that.
Well, the magic of this or the beauty of this is that who's to say the men won't come to the site to read?
That's true,
too.
To see what's going on
in the woman's mind.
Right. If they were smart, they would do that.
They would. And you know, ultimately, you know, like there is a Twitter, you know, ultimately, again, it would be, you know, if you want to get advice, you would chirp it, and not necessarily for women, but for everyone. But we're starting, you know, we're sort of focusing on this, on women right now, and we'll see where that takes us.
Yeah, I think it'll be very, very successful, and as I said, it looks user-friendly, so don't anybody be afraid to go over there and register. It's chirpit, chirppet.com, and can they give you a shout-out on there? I mean,
sure, yeah, there's a contact form. They can send it. It'll come right to me. They could let me know what they like or not like. We are on Twitter at Chirpit. They can follow us. So we have a Facebook page, facebook.com/chirpit. So we are, you know, getting our social networking together.
You have to hit all those social networks.
All those, yes, and we can be followed, and we could, you know, questions can be asked of us on all those platforms. And if people have ideas or categories they would like to see, or if they're having some, you know, problem with registering or whatever it might be, please feel free to reach out and let me know so we can rectify it and we can get everybody, you know, up and running.
Yeah, that's definite. You always need opinions. What is the word I'm looking for? Opinions, I guess, to let you know what's good, bad, or ugly. So
yes,
otherwise, you know, to make it successful.
Yes, exactly. So
for everybody.
Yeah. So that's been keeping me busy between, you know, developing this new business and my other soapdom business. There are not enough hours in the day for me, but I am also very excited about what's happening in the world of soaps now with the Days of Our Lives being picked up for another 18 months, which was announced today, and, you know, One Life to Live and All My Children, you know, being back in the picture. I think it's all very exciting and all very positive news for soap operadom. So,
yeah, and General Hospital bringing back all the old beloved characters. Oh,
yes.
My gosh. That is just wonderful to see all those faces again. And I was so, so, so excited to see John Lindstrom is coming back.
Yes, And did I see that someone else? Oh, Jeannie Francis.
Yes, Jeannie Francis.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you have to wonder what's going to go on with that, you know, with what is she going to be involved with Tony? I would imagine at some point she probably would be. But, you know, since him and Tracy are split up, so who knows? Maybe a quadrangle of some kind.
So let me ask you, are you primarily a General Hospital fan? I'm going to turn the tables on you now. I'm going to ask you a question.
No. ABC was first and foremost, but I've also watched CBS and NBC throughout the years.
Okay.
So,
well, what I was going to ask you in particular with General Hospital, do you see a change in this, you know, a positive change in the storytelling, you know, now that the new showrunners have, you know, been at the helm for a while? And,
most,
you know,
definitely. I look forward to watching it every day.
Okay.
You know, there was a point in time where before those new people came in that if I missed a day, it was like no big deal. You know, if I caught it later on what is it called, SoapNet?
Mm-hmm.
And then, or if I had it DVR'd, you know, if I watched it, fine. If not, I waited to the weekend and I caught up. But now you just don't want to miss a minute of it.
Right. Well, you know, the reason I asked this question is because somebody was tweeting with me today that they didn't like the stories on General Hospital, and we're hoping that they would change.
Well, you know, some
you
people,
can't
you can't please
else.
Them all.
Yeah. As far as you're concerned, it's an improvement and you're enjoying it.
Yeah.
Are you
yeah.
missing characters like Jason? And?
Oh, my gosh, I don't know how to answer this. I mean, I do, but I don't. And it's funny for me to say that because he's been such a huge, huge part of General Hospital for so many
years
now.
Yeah, 21 years.
And mm-hmm. I thought that the minute he was gone, maybe it's because it's so new and it just seems like he's only off for a few days or something. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's how my mind is doing it. I don't know. But I don't really miss him right away. And also I think it has to do with bringing Lucy back and bringing Ian Buchanan back and having him with Anna and then, mm-hmm. you know, all the other characters and the storylines are moving so quickly that it just keeps you entranced and you don't know what you're actually missing until you get off and you think about it.
Mm, interesting, yeah.
That's how my mind works.
Well, what are your thoughts that he's now going to be on Young and the Restless?
That's a wait and see. That's a wait and see for me. I first of all was shocked because I thought he wanted out of the business altogether, and that's why he moved and he was going into films and, you know, different projects. And what is it, a couple months or something since he left GH, and
yeah.
now he's on Y&R?
Yeah.
So, and then again, I'm not real surprised considering who he's friends with.
Right.
But, I don't know. I think his character may do well, and it may bring some GH fans over there. And, you know, and I think that's what's happening, too, a lot, because there are only four soaps left with the crossovers or even, you know, being like Ian Buchanan has been on every soap.
Mm-hmm.
And if you love him as an actor, you're
sure,
going to watch
that soap.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
So
sure.
This may happen with Jason, with Steve Burton as well.
Well, I had a lovely conversation just a few hours ago with Bree Williamson, who was passed from One Life to Live.
Mm-hmm.
And she has, you know, been one of the actors since the show was canceled. She has done, you know, quite well. She is
yeah.
on a new show on NBC now called mm-hmm. Deception.
Mm-hmm.
And she's also she was also in the last season of Haven on the Sci-Fi
mm-hmm.
Network.
Right.
So she's, you know, got two, you know, primetime roles. And the her new show on Deception, which just premiered this week on NBC on Monday nights.
I watched it. It was good.
10 p.m. She, you know, her character gets killed off, right?
Yeah, right at the beginning, poor girl.
Of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, it's like Twin Peaks or even Desperate Housewives. You know, the main character or the overall glue character of that show, Desperate Housewives, herself in the first, you know, couple of minutes of the show,
right.
and then continued throughout the seasons to narrate.
Right,
you know,
and to see how that person that got killed affected the rest of the characters, so
yeah,
you get story
yeah,
out
right,
of that.
Right, and that's what's going to happen with Bree Williamson's character on Deception, and she will continue to appear in flashbacks, and she's also doing these other, like, web-only, they're not really webisodes, I'm calling them video-sodes, where they're actually going into some of the scenes of the episodes, and she's narrating what happened or what led up to that scene as far as her character.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, so she's really more a part of the show than you might think.
Mm-hmm.
She was killed off in the first 60 seconds.
Yeah.
But so she's, you know, one of the stars from those cancel soaps that has, you know, continued on, but there are many, you know, that really haven't done much else. I saw Cameron Matheson from All My Children in a really bad Lifetime Movie Network movie. It was really bad. And I love him, but this was like, I'm thinking, who wrote this and how did it get produced? How did it get, you know, on television?
Yeah.
And I do love him. But, you know, work is work, and it's good to flex your muscles and do different things. But, you know, there are, you know, many actors who haven't, you know, really landed anything else. So I would really, you know, love to see those two soaps come back and some of those people get back on the air and get back to work because we miss, you know, we at Soap Them Here miss seeing them on.
Yes, well, from your lips, you know how that goes.
Yeah.
Question, are you 100% behind believing this is going to happen or are you cautious like the rest of us?
No, I know it's going to happen.
Okay.
So,
you know, we got burned so bad the last time, it's hard.
I know.
I mean, not that we're not hopeful and
well,
not that we're not praying because
I'll
we've been fighting every step of the way for this to happen.
Well, you know, I'll tell you this, Pam, and I, you know, I was saying this back last year when Prospect Park pulled the plug.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't totally pull the plug. Even in their statement, they didn't, you know, when that happened and they said they weren't going to be able to pull it together, they weren't going to be able to do it after, you know, exhaustive efforts on everybody's part, they couldn't get the deals done. And, you know, it's really what they are attempting to do is a lot more than just revive two soap operas. It's creating an entirely new form of long-form distribution on the Internet for programming. It's a huge thing. And, you know, when, you know, and really, you know, I have a production background also, and when I see some of the fans who really don't know the big picture or really don't know what's going on behind the scenes, and, you know, and they say, oh, this company, they don't know what they're doing, they're a little company, they don't know, you know, that's not true. They are a big production company. They have other very successful shows on the air.
Yeah, like USA, right?
Yes, yes, and they know, they do know what they're doing. But it just takes time. And what they did was underestimate the time they were going to need to pull it together. But when they, and that was the mistake. They underestimated.
Right.
But even when they pulled the plug last time, they never said they were abandoning it. They never said they were returning their rights to ABC. They said they were suspending their efforts.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that word suspending means we're putting it in abeyance.
Putting on hold or inactive.
Yeah, putting
or
it on hold. Mm-hmm. And what they did was continue behind the scenes to negotiate these deals and try to pull it together. And you know, they have. So it is going to happen. I have a very reliable information.
Well, I will try to believe the same thing you are.
Yes,
since you have more experience and more knowledge than I do.
Well, I've been proven wrong before, but you know, I will say that this is going to happen.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, Pam. Well, let me ask you a question. Do you think that once this happens and it's on the web, do you think there would be any possibility that down the road, the powers that be would maybe look at that and go, you know, maybe we should try to resurrect God and Light and, you know, as the world turns?
Well, you know, they very possibly might. I mean, Procter & Gamble entered into a distribution deal with a video production company about a year and a half ago to sell and distribute old episodes.
Mm-hmm.
So they had that deal going. But the prospect of doing new episodes of those shows, I mean, it is possible, but they would need to negotiate or do deals with Procter & Gamble because Procter & Gamble owns those shows.
Uh-huh.
With the ABC soaps, the network actually owned them. But with As the World Turns and Guiding Light, although they aired on CBS, Procter & Gamble owns those shows. So, I mean, it's all possible. And from what I know, All My Children and One Life to Live is not going to be the only programming that this network has, you know, down the line. So keep your fingers crossed, you know, and you know, let's take one step at a time. Let's get these on.
Yeah.
And see how
well,
successful.
You're talking to Dawn, who is a very, very big CBS fan of soap, so that's why I asked about that.
But
Dawn White was...
It's very possible.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, and really, and of course, I'm speaking from a very amateurish position because I know there's all, you know, there's a lot involved with something like this, and but it would be an incredibly smart move on Procter & Gamble's part if they ever decided to pursue it, I think, because YouTube and the web is you know, is kind of front and center of everything now. Even regular current television programming is on the web within 24 hours.
Yep.
So, you know, it would be, I think, a lot less expensive way to produce, you know, the shows that we love that are not on normal network television nowadays. And so I'm going to keep my fingers crossed that, you know, maybe Procter & Gamble will sit up and take note and see how, you know, All My Children and One Life to Live do.
Yeah,
and maybe
yeah.
they will say, maybe we
right.
could do something like this with the two soaps we lost, you know,
well,
and resurrect them.
Well, the thing is, Dawn, you know, don't get caught in the trap that just because it's going to the web, they're not going to be as expensive to produce. There are still writers involved. There are still production crews involved. There are still stages to rent and sets to build. And, you know, it's for them to do what Prospect Park is going to do is actually have a long-form program. This is not a webisode like Venice the Series or something, which is like a 6 or 8 minute thing, and they go out for, you know, a week, and they shoot 10 episodes and then edit them and air them. You know, this is doing a television, you know, type program, just that it's going to be distributed on the internet. So the cost involved, you know, they may not be as substantial as doing it in broadcast, but there still are.
Well, no doubt. I mean, because, you know, just by sheer magnitude of hiring all the actors back or as many of them as possible for the two shows, you know, that's not cheap in itself. So,
Well, it's very possible. But, you know, even if they did bring them back, I mean, how would you feel if they brought them back but they were the same but different? And that the stories were more current, or they were focusing on totally different characters, and some of the old veterans, you know, we'd only see maybe once every month, or, you know, and that stuff would evolve with the time, with the sentiment, and, you know, they would still be As the World Turns and Guiding Light, but they would be new As the World Turns and Guiding Light. What, how would you feel about that, and would you still tune in to watch and still support the show?
Yeah, I believe I would, especially if, you know, if they were getting the same, if they got the actors back or as many of them as possible, you know, to do the show. You know, but in truth, on the daytime, you know, I can just speak from the Young and the Restless standpoint. I mean, Young and the Restless daytime today, you know, a lot of the old familiar favorites that have been on there, you know, some have gotten backburnered. And, it, you know, to make it, for the sake of making it relevant with today's time. So, you know, as a Y&R fan, I'm already getting a big dose of that and have been for a little while. So it's not anything that would be shocking to me. I would just be excited
But, you know, in doing a soap opera, in having my soap opera business for a number of years, I mean, that's always been a very fine line that, you know, the producers and the writers had to walk for soap operas because, you know, you want to feature the veteran stars and the and you know relate to the storylines that everyone's familiar with, and but then, you know, to get new audiences, you need to bring in younger characters, and you know people would complain a lot in the summer because the summer was when kids were home from school.
Right.
They would start to bring in stories that with the younger generations, and
mm-hmm.
a lot of the older fans would complain about that. But the truth is, think back. When you started watching the show, you were probably in high school or grade school.
Yeah.
And the characters
definitely.
That interested you were characters who were also in high school or in grade school. And
mm-hmm.
yet you followed those characters for 20 years, and now they are the, you know, Victor Newmans of the world.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, so what they're trying to do is the same thing, is to start a new generation of people coming in, falling in love with characters that they can most immediately relate to, and then watch those characters grow as they grow for the next 20 years. But
mm-hmm.
for the older fans, it's like, oh, I don't care about these kids.
Yeah.
So it's, so
I know that's come out of my mouth a couple times.
You'll have a new perspective on that.
Yes.
But it's a fine, you know, it's a fine line, you know, and to write these shows or produce these shows. And, you know, I think that the writers do a really gargantuan job in trying to take all of that into account and please as many of the audiences, you know, that they can, but they're not going to be able to please everybody.
Right, right.
You know, it's just what happens. I used to call it what did I used to call it? I forgot now what I used to call it. but there would be, oh, yes, fan factions. That's what I used to call it.
Yeah, yeah.
And there
yeah.
would be a fan faction that was, let's take all my children. There was a fan faction who was an Erica and Jackson fan group, and they loved
mm-hmm.
Erica with Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
But then Erica had an affair with Dr. Dave and Cinder Azari. And then there were groups of fans that liked that couple. And
right.
those fans would argue to the death.
Oh,
the
yeah.
fans that
and
were
we
the
still see that now.
You know, so you have these fan factions that develop and emerge. And when you're a writer writing the show, if you write the storyline one way, well, you're going to please the one fan group of fans.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going to displease the other group of fans.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
So,
yeah. And then watch your timeline on Twitter.
Yes, yes. But it's an interesting conundrum, so.
It is. It is. Yeah, they just have to go with what they want to do as far as writers. And that's got to be one of the hardest jobs to have in that industry, especially in soaps.
It is.
So.
Because it's not only writing an amazing story. It's writing an amazing story for, you know, 30 or 40 characters.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah.
And for so many years.
Yes, and it's also taking into account their history. It's also
mm-hmm.
taking into account their character traits. It's also taking into account that this actor is going to be on vacation during these weeks, or this
mm-hmm.
actor has got, you know, going to make a pilot, you know, and is not going to be around to be on the show for these few weeks.
Right.
Or this actor is complaining he's working too much.
Mm-hmm.
Or this actor is complaining he's not working enough.
Yep.
Or this producer is saying they want to see more of this particular couple. The
right.
actors hate each other and they have to do
yeah.
love scenes together. So,
there's a million things in there and I do not.
A billion things.
Yeah, I'm not jealous of writers at all. They
and the actors do.
Yeah.
They all work really hard.
Mm-hmm.
They all
exactly.
work really hard.
Exactly.
But it's a great medium, and I'm really happy that the two canceled ABC soaps will get a new life, and that, as I said, that Days has been renewed, and it's great, all great.
Yeah, we'll just have to keep watching, and that's the only way you're going to keep a soap on is to keep watching, whether you're happy
right.
or not with a storyline or a character or a couple. Things change quickly and sometimes take a little bit longer, but you have to keep watching. They start losing viewership, then they get canceled. And then what do you have? Nothing. So keep watching.
One of the things I say, too, is that, you know, the Internet, which is a great medium, and it's a great medium to promote and market, can also, you know, bite its nose to spite its face.
Mm-hmm.
Because
yep.
there are some journalists or people online who like to just spill the beans just for the sensationalism of it. And what happens is when you know, like there are some websites, and I don't know the exact URLs to these sites, but there are, you know, in Canada, shows like Days of Our Lives and Young and the Restless air the day before they air here.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
there are these,
ahead.
Yes, and there are these websites that will post the entire episode word for word. So why do we have to tune in and watch it?
Yep.
When
yeah,
we can,
that's true.
You know, we already know what's going to happen.
Yep.
You know, there's,
I never
you know,
watch those, so just know that. I never watch a day ahead. I try not to watch any spoilers, if at all possible, because I want to wait and watch a full episode and be interested in it.
Yeah. Well, it used to be back in the day, like when all our moms watched soaps, that you didn't know from day to day if they were going to kill off a character or if someone was going to come back.
That's true.
The actress didn't know.
Right.
So actors would go to work and get a script and say 2 weeks later they were going to, you know, fall off some elevator shaft.
Mm-hmm. I can't help but think of Joey on that.
That's why, I used that example. Yeah, Dr. Drake Ramore. Right.
Yes.
He found out that day that he was falling down the elevator shaft. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and he fought it.
That's right. But that's how it used to be.
Yeah.
And it made things more spontaneous, I think, and it made things more, you know, you had to tune in. You know, you were glued. What was going to happen tomorrow?
Gosh, those long weekends. Oh, my gosh.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they always had the cliffhanger on Friday, you know, with the big, you know.
Yes.
The door opens and the long-lost husband is back from the dead and, you know, tune in Monday for what happens. Yeah. So,
yeah, the good old days.
Yeah.
But you have to just keep your mindset to that and just, you know, not watch ahead and watch the spoilers unless you're that type of person that needs to know ahead of time. I hope, you know, they still watch the full episode.
Well, one of the things that we would do with Soapdom is when we report spoilers, we say a little bit of what might be happening, but we don't give it all away. And we say, you know, you're going to have to, you know, tune in to watch it. So that's the way I like to do spoilers. But there are some other sites out there that will give it all away. I even have to tune in now. I don't have to tune in.
So. Yeah. Well, Linda, it's been great talking to you. I mean,
thank you guys
love
for having
this.
Me on. And everybody, you know, visit us at soapdom.com and also visit us at chirpit.com. And come
same
share advice
on Twitter.
With us and chirp it and participate at Soapdom, and we'll see you online.
Yeah, I just followed you on Twitter at Chirp It. So
thank you.
You're welcome, and we would love to have you back again one day in the future and see how things are going, discuss, you know, both soaps and your Chirp It, and we wish you much success.
Thank you very much, guys. A pleasure talking with you. Have a good evening.
You too.
Thanks.
Thank
you.
You
too.
Bye.
Well, we want to thank all of our listeners for joining us tonight. We hope you enjoyed our interviews.
Oh, no, really.
And check out chirpit.com because it really does look like a great website, and I think that it would be a lot of fun for women besides learning different things.
Most definitely.
Or getting
a
question answered.
Yeah, it's a real neat little site, and it you know, it kind of has the feel of Twitter, but it has a great purpose and intent behind it. So, you know, who knew? I mean, an advice site. So, you know, check it out, guys, and I think you'll love it.
I think so, too. Well, Dawn, thank you for spending the next the past 2 hours with me and with Linda and with Cynthia and everybody. I really enjoyed myself.
Fun. Lots of fun. So definitely I will I look forward to the next time, which will be Saturday night at 5 p.m. So 5
for
p.m.
Eileen
Eastern.
Carey.
For Eileen Carey, yes. So it'll be a great fun. And then, of course, Sunday we have our epic guest coming, too.
I'm so excited. Follow
and
us on Twitter to find out what this announcement is going to be.
That's
there's actually two announcements, one tomorrow and one on Friday of who our guest is going to be on Sunday.
Yes,
so with
definitely.
That, I take leave, and I wish you a blessed night, all of our listeners, and also to Dawn, my wonderful friend and co-host.
Oh, thank you. Same to you, Pam.
You're welcome. Good night, everybody.
Tonight's show has been brought to you by...
One taste of Main Street Cake Shop, baked from scratch, custom-made cakes and cupcakes, and you'll be hooked. Every cake is made to order with only the finest and freshest ingredients. This is no ordinary bakery. Cakes are never pre-made. Main Street Cake Shop is in demand, having provided cakes and cupcakes for numerous prestigious events, bridal fairs, and venues. Owned and operated by April Murray, she has garnered many awards for not only her exquisite cake designs, but also for their incredible taste. If you're looking for a cake for any occasion, or cupcakes in a variety of flavors, then Main Street Cake Shop is the place. Visit them on the web at mainstreetcakeshop.com.